Health is everything.
La salud lo es todo.
Health is everything.
Health is everything.
La santé est tout.
Zdrowie jest wszystkim.
Afianiki lakito.
Dzień pomdzisi apki.
Halsa a.
Health is everything.
In a few short years, psychedelics have gone from being stigmatized historical relics to a topic of intense and passionate worldwide interest, based largely on studies suggesting that these medicines may be a generation-defining breakthrough in the treatment of mental illness. Our guest for this podcast is my friend and colleague, Dr. Rosalind Watts. Dr. Watts has played an outsized role in the psychedelic renaissance. She's internationally recognized as a leader in the study and implementation of psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy. She developed and led the psychedelic-assisted therapy program used in two of the very first modern studies looking at psilocybin as a treatment for depression. More recently, she is the founder of ACER Integration, which is an international year-long integration community developed for connecting to the self, others, and the natural world. In this podcast, we trace Dr. Watts' journey in the psychedelic world, listening to her describe how she initially hoped that psychedelics might routinely cure mental illness, but how this early unqualified optimism has given way to a growing concern that increasingly unrealistic hopes for these medicines are distorting both their risks and their benefits. She brings this journey to life with inspiring and occasionally painful vignettes from her clinical work with psychedelics. The podcast concludes with Dr. Watts laying out a vision for integrating psychedelics into more holistic ways of promoting mental health and building healing communities, both things that the modern world desperately needs.
Health is everything.
Thank you, Roz. Thank you for joining me in my living room this evening.
Thank you, Chuck.
So, you know, you are one of the most high-profile people in the psychedelic space. And to me, you're a really interesting one because you, more than other people, I think, have articulated complexities that I think are hugely important. And that I think in our kind of mad rush to see psychedelics as miracle cures are being overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we could start by just tell us a little bit about how you got into the world of psychedelics.
So I was a clinical psychologist in the National Health Service in the United Kingdom, and I'd been working for a while and feeling like the tools that we had were not working for many people. It was clear that something needed to change. So I was feeling quite frustrated that my training wasn't really preparing me for the needs that I was seeing. And then my best friend had a really bad bout of depression. And she was really poorly for a long time. And she went to Peru to have an ayahuasca retreat. Mm-hmm. And it was the first thing that had really helped her. She'd had depression for quite a while.
And she'd taken regular medicines and things like that?
Yeah, she tried antidepressants. She tried anti-anxiety medication. And she'd tried CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. And she'd had, she tried lots of different things. She tried lots of alternative methods as well. And nothing had really... she was really stuck in a rut. She was stuck and nothing had shifted it. And then she came back from Peru and I was incredibly skeptical before she went because I'd never really heard of it. And I thought it sounded very dangerous and, you know, just very strange as well. I didn't understand it. But when she came back, I could really see immediately that she was back to her old self again. So there was a physical change in her appearance.
Yeah.
And her eyes were sparkling and bright. And it was so moving to see that in her that I started kind of, you know, looking into it a little bit. And then there was a study at Imperial College and I asked them if they wanted a volunteer and got into it.
There you go. And so from that position of starting as a volunteer, and you started with that open trial of treatment-resistant depression,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
So a study of about 20 people where mm-hmm. everybody got two doses of psilocybin.
Yeah.
These are people who had failed prior medications.
Yes.
And at the time, what did you think? So your friend had mm-hmm. this powerful experience and there'd been a time in her life before where she wasn't depressed. She had a classic episode. And did she stay undepressed?
So actually, yes. So because I saw that with her, And because in the years since then, I have seen the cases of people who have had various number of decades of feeling well.
Yeah.
And then something has happened that's led to an episode of depression. And they've been there for a little while. And it's in response to something that's changed in their lives, as it had for her,
mm-hmm.
that a really profound course of psychedelic therapy. I mean, she'd been to Peru for, 2 weeks and had many ayahuasca ceremonies in a period of those 2 weeks. So she'd had quite a deep therapeutic journey.
Yeah.
It wasn't just one session. And she'd been in the Amazon jungle and everything else. So in that circumstance, when it's kind of a kind of one-off bout of depression, I think sometimes it psychedelic therapy can be the thing, even in a few sessions, that tips somebody into just moves them into a different path, and then they can flourish again.
Yeah.
And that happened with her. So when I went into that trial, I had this kind of sense of like, wow, this was a magical miracle thing that happened to my friend. And everything I saw in that first trial, well, not everything, but I interviewed everybody 6 months after their experience to ask them about how the psychedelic therapy sessions they'd had affected them. And yeah, I heard the same kind of narrative of it was the first thing that had helped and it was incredible. So I got the bug. I really thought, wow, this is a miracle cure. I mean, not quite that extreme, but this is something that is going to heal people's depression. Yeah. And I look back at that now and I think that was a slightly naive position to hold.
Yeah. But it's interesting, because the field itself, I think it had sort of the same experience that you had with your friend. Mm. So like my first exposure, like you, I was not a psychonautic kind of person, but my first exposure was seeing the results from the cancer studies that were done at Hopkins at NYU. And these were people that generally had not had a lot of long-term depression, and they had a major problem. They were, they had a potentially lethal cancer,
yeah.
and they'd fallen into a depression, anxiety around that. And those people, even with one treatment, a whole bunch of them just sort of kind of seemed to pop out of it, right? And so I had the same thought that this was going to be curative in some way, more like an appendectomy than high blood pressure medicine, right?
Yes.
That you do it and
mm-hmm.
What began to make you question that?
So I think it's happened in two stages, and I'll remember to come back to the second stage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Remind me if I don't.
Okay.
But the first stage of it was, so the first thing that happened after interviewing everybody 6 months after their experience was that I stayed in touch with some of them because there was a documentary that was made called Magic Medicine.
I saw it.
Lovely documentary.
Yep.
And I stayed in touch with the participants that were in that film.
Mm-hmm.
And also with the filmmaker who stayed in touch with them too. And that was because his follow-up was a lot longer than our study follow-up. So the official data collection in our study was a couple of months. And my qualitative interview was 6 months later.
Yeah.
And already at the 6 month point, people were starting to say, my depression is kind of coming back a bit, but they were so grateful for the experience they'd had that they were filled with gratitude and hope and wonder at what had happened. So they focused more on that than on the fact that their depression was starting to come back. But I remember one participant did say that his depression had been like living in darkness, and that the psychedelic experience had been like turning on the lights in a dark house. He could see his life again.
Mm-hmm.
And that when I spoke to him after 6 months, the lights were starting to dim again. And then he was in the film, and the film did a much longer follow-up. So they stayed with him for many more months. And what happened was that his depression came back very fully. And then he wanted more psychedelic therapy and it wasn't available to him. And there wasn't really any integration, which is, the therapeutic support for him. And, if he went to his doctor, they would say, what did you do? You took a psychedelic drug and then you want help for what?
Yeah.
So he was put on medication again. He made a suicide attempt for some months later. And that really impacted me because I felt this huge sense of sadness around the kind of wonder drug narrative in the media of like, this is one session can change your life. And knowing that for him and for many of the other participants whose depression had come back, their brains hadn't been reset. In fact, they were struggling with terrible depression again. And there was an extra layer of difficulty in that there was this narrative around psychedelics, like one session will cure you, that I think there was a loneliness that came for them having been part of something that was so hopeful, feeling good, their family members thinking, oh, my husband's back, you know, and then, you know, that his kids were so happy that their dad was back and then he's in his room again with the door closed.
Yeah.
So, you know, just the disappointment of all that hope and the fact that there wasn't any support around it. So I started to feel like, was there something a little bit unethical around inviting people into this incredibly powerful experience and then there not being support frameworks for them afterwards and there not being anything to hold them when the depression came back.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just with him that the depression came back. It was with, I started running an integration group in the community, and that was for, because I was going to be designing the therapy for the next trial, because of this experience with this particular participant and a few of the other ones, I realized that we were going to need some kind of structure for after the sessions, for after the trial with the next people. So a colleague friend, I started this integration community, and this was just a drop-in. So people could come and talk about psychedelic experiences they'd had and any difficulties they'd had. And it was harm reduction, essentially. It was a monthly group. And from running that, I got a whole other set of data, as in, you know, not like formal data, but that's when I really realized that there were so many people coming to see us that had been to Peru and had been to retreats in the Netherlands and all had taken acid in their car because they'd read some story in the paper saying that they could reset their brain. And there were so many people that were struggling with all sorts of different kind of responses to it.
Yeah.
So that's when I started to think, okay, it's more nuanced than I previously thought.
There's a bit of an opening Pandora's box about it. Is that sort of right? That these experiences are so powerful. And I think also, obviously, you know, in mental health, in medicine in general, the medicine is the end of the journey.
Yeah.
And I think that's a bad metaphor here too, probably, right?
Yes.
Were there any people in that first trial that actually just maintained, you know, kind of happy, no problem? Or did they all eventually kind of...
There were two, if I remember correctly, there were two people who seemed to stay well. And when I looked at that, they were two people who definitely seemed to have a kind of single episode, more recent bout of depression after, you know, decades of not having depression, or maybe something much earlier in life that then got triggered after a particular event.
Mm-hmm.
But also what's difficult in understanding these kind of things is that I believe that one of them, if not both of them, had ayahuasca sessions themselves in the integration period. So that might be one of the reasons why they had
dosed again.
Yeah.
And so this was a first study, and then you led the psychotherapy for a very famous study in the world of psychedelics. It was in New England Journal of Medicine, where it was compared to an SSRI, to a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. And I was over in Amsterdam a week or two ago, so I heard a little bit about the sort of long-term follow-up. Mm. Do you feel that, to the degree you can talk about it, had a publication, do you feel like that things were different in that study? Because those were also people that were depressed for a long time generally, right?
Yes. So, so in that study, there was a lot more therapeutic support, and they also had an integration network afterwards, and we provided quite a lot of group integration support afterwards too. So I think that there was much more of a sense of a container being there. I think we, because of what we'd seen the first time around, we knew that we needed to provide that. And I think that, you know, having stayed in touch with a subset of those participants, you know, depression came back for them just as much as in the first time round. I think that's, and I don't think that quantitative questionnaires given by a research team always capture it.
Yeah.
Because my contact with the participants since then has been that I set up an integration community for people, a long-term integration community for them to do together in a group. And we had lots of people that had been in the trial that applied to do it. And their depression had come back for all of them. You know, obviously they were the ones that applied to do it. But I have a sense that probably with them, even though I was you know, seeing them for these groups, and I could see that they were struggling and their depression had come back. You know, I still think that there was a sense of massive gratitude for the experience, still thinking it was really helpful, wanting psychedelics to come through because they want to have further psychedelic doses. Mm. So I'm not sure that the filling in the questionnaires about how people are doing, I don't know if people are always fully open about the extent of their difficulties because they want it to have been a cure.
Yeah.
So the idea that one set, you know, knowing now just from the world that I exist in now, which is lots of people working in psychedelics, psychedelic therapists underground, you know, just people I know that use psychedelics personally, the idea that one session would completely, for most people, yes, with serious long-term depression seems ridiculous.
Yeah. It was amazingly, I think, probably naive and optimistic.
Yeah.
So do you think, you know, just sort of based on what you've seen, that how do you think about the balance between recurrent psychedelic use and other ways of trying to extend sort of any, because this is a big, any given dose, right? Because it's such a big question in the field, right? I mean, obviously, if folks are using a psychedelic every month or two, that's a very different, the optics on that are very different than if they're doing it, you know, a few times in a lifetime.
Yes. I mean, I think there are issues around, the potential issues around people going in really regularly to keep going, you know, these deep dives, like really regularly. So I think that for me, the ideal model is understanding the psychedelic experience as an opening, and then following that with a really robust community-based, group-based, potentially, but just whatever that person likes, or if they feel, you know, follow their joy, you know, whatever kind of works for them, whatever the psychedelic experience might have opened up, any sense of meaning or purpose, whatever. I mean, they're kind of, you know, psychedelic means soul revealing. Yeah. That's one reading of it. If you see psyche as soul, which, you know, if they're kind of soul revealing, then they can give people that insight into like, oh, this is what's meaningful for me. This is what I love. And that for me is a real beauty of them. It's not so much as a treatment that's going to, you know, fix a mental health care disease, or it's more like opening people up to who they really are. And that's what I think can be so powerful, that they see a glimpse of who am I and why am I here? And which is like the best antidepressant, you know. Yeah. So they see a glimpse of that. And if they can be provided with some kind of long-term-ish, real, authentic, caring, compassionate way of following that for a while, and that then maybe once a year they might have another deep dive to keep that journey going, you know, deeper and deeper. Mm-hmm. But I think like once a year rather than more
once
than
a
that.
Month.
Most people.
Yeah. Because I think, of course, then the interesting thing about once a month is you're beginning to drift back into dependence on a medicine, right?
Yes.
And, you know, I think you've articulated this really, you know, wonderfully in different places that's a different paradigm, right? So the paradigm, of course, there's so many different paradigms afoot in the psychedelic development world right now. Of course, on the opposite extreme for you are our buddies, people that you and I both know, you know, I sent one of them to you, as you know, who clearly just see this as a drug, right?
Yes.
And it's just a drug and it has to do with receptor modulation, that sort of thing. Which seems to me to be a lot less interesting and important. But what you're articulating is a very, very different way of thinking about emotional suffering.
Yes.
The world of mental health, especially in the United States, just, you know, doesn't work that way. Mm. So it's pretty interesting. So I think one of the ways you've tackled that, right, is that you've talked a little about ACER and sort of how, you know, that vision, because it's a way of trying to take to scale, I think, right?
Yes.
Ways of this view of psychedelics as opening agents, as things that are the start of a journey.
Yes.
Rather than a drug that you're going to, you know, just rely on to keep you in a sort of chilled out emotional state.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and also because I will definitely answer that in a second as well, but just I think the thing that I was kind of trying
there
to...
Was second
yeah,
thing,
there was a
second
thing,
yes.
Which I've kind of forgot, which I knew I would, but... It's vaguely tied into How to articulate this? This isn't actually something I have articulated in any talks before, but something I've been thinking about just recently, which is, and actually we talked about it at the conference that you and I were both at. It was on one of the panels at the end, which is that one of the huge drivers of suffering is the social conditions that we live in. And that's just not people that are living in conditions of social degradation, although many people are. We're all living in a condition of environmental degradation, the fear of environmental breakdown.
Yeah.
And also people that are living even in privileged places, there's a huge lack of connectedness. There's huge social disconnection, often spiritual disconnection. People might not even realize they're missing it. And who am I to say that they are? Because, you know, this is a personal thing that it's even there. But it used to be much more common for people to have a kind of belonging to something greater than themselves than now. So this huge disconnection and disconnection from nature often too. So in these very disconnected societies that we live in, if we then introduce psychedelics as a healing tool without directly trying to change the conditions of our societies, then we perpetuate a very broken system, and we continue with this narrative that psychological problems, psychiatric difficulties are within the individual. Mm-hmm. And we have no obligation to change society then. If it's just, oh, there's something wrong with you, so we're going to give you a drug, whether that's antidepressants, whether it's really amazing psychedelic therapy, it doesn't matter. Even if it's the most wonderful psychedelic therapy, it's the same principle, because it's still treating the individual without changing society. And you might say, well, you know, but psychedelic therapy is different because that person, you know, they might go and bring change to their communities because they've been, you know, the mechanism is different. Antidepressants tend to kind of shut people down or numb. Psychedelics tend to open people up. Yeah, sure, they might, you know, go out and, you know, exact some change in the world, but I don't think that's enough. I think we need to be more proactive. So I think that what ASAT, I'll explain what it is, this kind of community, but at its heart, it's really trying to, well, it's trying to bring back some connectedness, so that creating places where people can access that. It might not be in their hometown, but this is an online community. So even if it's not where you live, there is a way that you can plug in to a sense of connectedness to yourself, to nature, so that we're not just treating the symptoms, we're also slowly starting to look at the problems. And actually, ACE is a tiny part of it. I mean, it's a very small part. We need so much more political change too. But there's an interesting idea. So one of the psychiatrists that works with MDMA has a really great TED talk talking about MDMA as an antibiotic. So saying for mental health difficulties. So they use it for people with PTSD. And the idea is, like, antidepressants are a kind of painkiller, anesthetic. They stop you from feeling the pain, but they don't do anything about the root cause. Whereas psychedelics are antibiotics because they get to the root cause of your difficulties. And in that analogy, root cause is your trauma, your deep down latent trauma. But I think, no, from what I've seen, if they were antibiotics, they would get at a deeper cause, which is our underlying disconnectedness. So they're not antibiotics. They're also dealing with symptoms, because our trauma is a symptom of underlying disconnectedness. So if we're going to look at healing the root of the problem, then that's where we've got to go. So anything we can do to bring connectedness into our communities is, I think, what we need as humanity, is what we need to desperately focus on bringing back. And so ASA, I mean, I, after that great big lofty thing, I mean, it's a tiny little project, you know, so I feel like that sounds all very grandiose, that that's the intention. We're starting very small, and it's more like having the intention of doing this, and we don't know how it's going to go. But after the clinical trial for depression, the second one, because people needed more integration, I set up these sharing circles for people to meet each other, because in the clinical trials, it's just individual, so they don't meet each other. So we started these sharing circles, and people loved it. They loved talking to each other. And we realized that if you hold the space well, and if you get a Zoom meeting with 8 people who have been through something really challenging, that they've got a shared experience, and you ask them to share and not give each other advice, but just share from the heart how they're really feeling, and to witness each other and be, you know, compassionate, it's amazing. It's amazing to witness. It's amazing to be part of. So I started to think from that, okay, these sharing circles, there's some potency here. So ACER is essentially harnessing that power, and it's an online community for anyone to join. It's a 12-month process. And I can tell you about it, but I feel like I've just talked forever. So
that's okay. Yeah.
I can go into more detail if you like, but basically, yeah, it's an online community with, sharing and
stuff. And not just for people that have had a psychedelic.
No, for anybody. Because the idea is it's for the purpose of the community is for increasing connectedness to self. And that means to emotions and senses and the body. An ability to sit with difficult emotions, and then connection to other people and community, and finally connection to nature and the wider world and purpose, and to increase a sense of living as part of an interconnected web of life as well, to remember that we are part of that web.
Yeah, which of course is in the larger family of effects that psychedelics have for many people, right? So there's a little bit of a connection there.
But. Oh yeah. I mean, it's the whole process, all the content of the program has all directly come out of observing psychedelic therapy and the mechanisms of it, and just trying to nurture those mechanisms. So it's, building connectedness. And so the design of the whole thing is all based around, and there's also breath work in it too. So there's some breath work sessions, because breath work seems to be able to help people access those same altered states of consciousness in a legal and more subtle way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm also very interested in breath work. Mm. In the sharing groups you had in that second psychedelic study, did they help people maintain their sort of gains, do you think?
Yes. So it's been interesting working with this specific group of people through the clinical trials, through the integration period, through COVID. And now I've been working with them for years now, because we've been doing this integration community for, since started at the beginning of 2020, and it's now, where are we?
Almost end of 22.
So it's been a long process, and we've been meeting regularly for these groups. And it has really helped. So you might have seen at the conference in the Netherlands on the closing panel, if you saw that,
No, I was on a plane, sort of on a plane.
So it was, I think it was Paul Stamets, Rick Doblin, and a woman called Leonie Schneider.
I know. I spent some time with Leonie. She was great.
Yes. So Leonie was someone that was in the clinical trial, and she was she's been part of the ACER community. And one of the ways ACER works is because I think one of the best ways of helping cope with depression and any other difficult state that we can be in, difficult situation or suffering, is helping other people. And so one of the main aspects of ACER is that it's this 12-month process with these different things that people do. And you go through the process, and when you've been through it, then you can be a sharing circle facilitator for new people going through it. So Leonie was an example of somebody who was in the clinical trial, was part of the kind of first phases of ACER, and we piloted it at Synthesis in the Netherlands for the first year. And she's now going to be a sharing circle facilitator. And when I look at her now, I mean, I'm not saying it's just because of ACER. I mean, it's, lots of factors, but her flourishing is extreme. It's an extreme process of flourishing. Like, to be able to witness somebody, I mean, she's obviously still going to be suffering, depression is something that it's not just going to, but the ability to find your purpose.
Yeah.
She's up there on a stage with the head honchos of psychedelic therapy. And she and Ian Roulier, who is another amazing person, he was also he's the same situation as Leonie.
Yeah.
In the clinical trial, was part of ACER. He is also, still suffering from depression, but finding his purpose, finding meaning, finding connectedness. And he started this organization called SCIPAN, which is the psychedelic participant advocacy network for people that have been through clinical trials and whose depression had come back and who didn't access any care. And, in MAPS, there was a whole thing with that too. Like, there's a lot of people that need this. So he set up this organization, Leonie joined him, and the two of them are, they're speaking at all sorts of, they're amazing. So I don't think depression, I don't think we curative. I mean, in a way right now, it almost feels like that's not the kind of the question, because we are living in such a time that depression is quite a sane response.
Uh-huh.
So rather than trying to like fix people's brains and get rid of the depression, it's more like, okay, it's quite healthy to be depressed right now. We need to change our world. And that's what Leonie and Ian are doing, because they are holding the fact that they're feeling those feelings, and they're getting up on the stage and they are seeing what they can do to like,
yeah,
change things.
Absolutely. And you've met our friend Willow now, who says, yes, who says, if you're not depressed, you're not tracking.
Yeah.
All right. Yes. I mean, yeah, these are, you know, for so many reasons, as you articulated beautifully, these are difficult times. And yes, I spent quite a bit of time talking to Leonie.
Yeah.
And it was such an interesting conversation, because she said, yes, I'm glad I came into the study. I'm glad I did that. It was amazing. And it is really hard.
Yeah.
Because, yes, you know, everybody, you said something very powerful, which was, you know, sort of accepting difficult emotions or living with or dealing with difficult emotions. You know, the whole goal of the psychiatry that I've been involved with all these years is to make those things go away.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I think what a lot of data are suggesting, though, unfortunately, is that, again, maybe like an antibiotic, like there's sometimes when you need a drug, you know, if you get so bad, you're going to kill yourself. It's better,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Yes.
But on the other hand, you know, we put in antibiotics in our cow feed and, you know, we sort of put our Prozac in our cow feed, right? Where, you know, this idea, and there's some real problems with that, you know, but this is a very different way of looking at things.
Completely. And it is so hard, because it's one thing to talk about facing difficult emotions and sitting with them, and it's another thing to do it. And psychedelic experiences, for me, are usually absolutely terrifying, which I'm grateful for, because it's given me, you know. But it's whenever I've had those experiences, it's like, oh, hours and hours of sitting with really painful feelings. And it's so horrible. I would do anything to escape it in those moments. But at the same time, there's no avoiding it. You know, what you resist persists. There's no getting rid of it.
Yeah.
We can't get rid of what's happened in our lives that has led to these feelings and what we're feeling from the outside. So it's like when you feel alone in it and you're feeling alone in your horrible, messy, murky emotions, it's terrifying and unbearable, really. But when you feel connected to other people who are also going through their murky stuff, and who care about you, and you care about them, and you're all doing it together consciously with intention. Yeah. It's like, let's build the structures we need to help us feel these feelings.
Yes.
Because our society hasn't bothered building them, because we've been giving people medication instead.
Exactly.
So when we create the structures in our community that we need to enable us, rituals, ceremonies, other ways we can connect, more, you know, just more beauty, more singing, more dancing, you know, we need the joy too, to go to, you know, the hell places. You need to counterbalance it with lots of beauty. And if we can find ways of building these kind of structures, I think we can sit with those feelings. And when we sit with these feelings, they change, they shift,
yes,
we process them, and we can actually, I mean, that really is not curative, but that's transformational.
Very helpful, right? So that basically, yes, you know, you, and of course, there's a whole, you know, you're involved in the development of that really great thing called the emotional breakthrough inventory, which is a scale,
yes,
which basically says, were you able to face this stuff,
yeah,
and tolerate it, deal with it,
yeah,
but there are various choices, but
yes,
everything other than I tried to push it away,
yes,
and, you know,
yeah,
and, you know, the data aren't, right? I mean, if you can do that, if you can do that in a psychedelic experience,
yes,
you get a benefit. You know, you've seen and I've seen in life that if you can do that, you get a benefit also.
Completely, yeah. And it's also, it feels important because it's so, yes, it's so counter to the culture we've been living in. And it's just so clear that it hasn't been working, you know, just in a systemic way, that idea of push through, you know, we need to be kind of really productive. And if you think about, like, so a lot of the ASER, it's based around metaphors of nature, the codes of nature, because that's what we are. And it's a lot about the ideas of being able to be seasonal. So be able to have winters, springs, summers, autumns, not to be in constant summer all the time. But our culture really expects us, demands us to be in productivity all the time, working hard all the time and happy all the time. And so we need, yeah, like something about being able to sit with the wintry times and allow them. It's really like challenging that narrative. And it's the economic narrative. It's based around our economic systems of capitalism, never-ending growth. But it's like, well, we're not actually going to be able to do that. So let's not do that.
Yes, exactly.
It's going to kill us all if we do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, human beings, you know, as a human being, you can only take so much. I mean, this is, this is another way of thinking about the challenge of the modern world. Is,
yes.
You know, it's great for computers and AIs. They, but the human, you know, but if, the, yeah. you know, but the humans have to survive and thrive too.
Yes.
And, you know, we are a certain type of animal that needs certain types of things, especially yes. connection.
Yes.
Thank you, Ross. This was a great, aww. Great interview. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing you in the spring too. That's aww. Great.
Thank you so much, Chuck. Enjoyed it.
Health is everything.
Thank you for listening to Health is Everything. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to subscribe or share it with a friend or rate it on Apple Podcasts. You can visit us at exploringhealth.org and follow the Emory University Center for the Study of Human Health at CSHH or at Exploring Health, that's all one word, Exploring Health, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Until next time, I'm Dr. Charles Raison, wishing you the best of health until we meet again.
Health is everything.
La salud lo es todo.
Health is everything.
Health is everything.
La santé est tout.
Zdrowie jest wszystkim.
Afianikila kito.
Dzień pomdzisiaki.
Al-Sahara.
Health is everything.